Welcome to Seeking Alpha, the podcast where we're diving deep into crypto, careers, and the chaos of modern dating. I'm Larissa Bunziak.
And I'm Lindsay Poss. Together, we're two women who somehow found themselves at the intersection of crypto Twitter, Silicon Valley, and Tinder. Welcome to the first ever Seeking Alpha Pod live show.
Come back, bitches. And parentheses, endearing way.
So we have a fun show planned. We have three segments, lots of learning, and then lots of stuff about our love lives. And so Larissa is going to kick us off with evolution of value segment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe we should take a step back and describe the theme, which is evolution of all of our segments. So I didn't tell you this, but the reason I thought of this was this past weekend, I was at a wedding and the couple had been telling me about this guy for years who lives where the groom was from and he works in crypto. I saw pictures of him. He looked amazing, but we never got to meet because he never came to New York. And so I'm at this wedding and minding my own business and this guy comes up to me with this flop of hair. Like, I cannot see his eyes.
Oh, no.
And he's like, "You're the crypto girl." And I'm like, there's a person under there? And he's like, "It's me." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And so then I walked over to my friend. I'm like, "Oh, my God, this shaggy dog just came up to me and, like, was trying to rekindle this romance that only happened on Instagram." And she's like, "You can just lick his hair back. He would look good." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that. Like, he could change his hair." So I went up to him again, and I was like, "So you work at X company?" Blah, blah, blah. And I'm looking at him like,
"It's not just this floppy hair.
This hair, it would be too much of a drastic change for him." So I came back to my friend. I'm like, "Yeah, no, he changed too much." And then I'm like, "I didn't really change. Like, maybe. I mean, physically, no, because I know that I pay enough to look like a young nubile, and there's no way that I've changed since the last time he saw me on Instagram. But actually, I have changed a lot in terms of my perception of value, my approach to dating, and risk. That is..."
Oh, that's how we got the evolution.
That's how we're here.
Yay! Fun!
So, anyway, so back to the evolution of value, in which we're going to lead to why Bitcoin exists. But brief history of value, starting with the history of gold, a.k.a. the gold standard, a.k.a. the era of financial chastity. So pre-1971, every dollar was backed by a physical piece of gold. So you could go into a bank and you could exchange $35 for an ounce of gold. And the government could not print more money because it had to be backed physically by gold. So this created natural limits, natural discipline, natural consequences.
Yes.
Meanwhile,
so gold was a big store of value at this time. The second was real estate. Post-World War II, there was a big real estate boom. Lots of people were buying land, building homes. What we've seen from that is that that was basically a way of forced savings and forced investment. Every mortgage payment that was made was then actually put towards a real thing of value. What that enabled was a whole economy built on top of that real estate. And so not only were people being able to buy, like, this piece of land, which is a scarce resource, they were then able to leverage the value of that land into other things. So collateral for any kind of loan that you might think of, but also institutions themselves were leveraging those mortgages into things like mortgage-backed securities. And so land was really the thing that kicked off this giant ability of, like, creating financial tools around a scarce resource. So land was the underpinning of savings and value for the modern economy that we built and the current financial system that we have.
So yeah, land is how people stored their wealth and passed it on to future generations. Gold was the standard to which dollars were backed by. So what the fuck happened? In 1971, this little dominatrixy minx named Richard Nixon unlocked the chastity belt of the Fed. And like anybody whose chastity belt comes unlocked, the Fed started fucking, a.k.a. printing money, relentlessly. And that's how we got to such bad inflation. So this was the taking off of the gold standard, and then came the Nixon shock. So money became purely faith-based. It became based on the fact that the government would enforce it, and there's a military behind the government. The Fed could now print money without actually pegging that money to gold, which is scarce. And that was the whole point of the gold standard.
Yes. And so the limitations on that actually completely changed the way that we look at debt, which debt now then became like a huge part of our society. So before, if you had $100 and it was backed by gold, there wasn't actually that much you could do with it to increase that money's value. At the time, it was worth $100 and it was worth a certain amount of gold. As soon as we went to a fiat standard, this little thing called leverage came into play. And so leverage was a way of saying, okay, I have $100, but I'm going to make a bet and I'm going to 10x it. And I'm going to actually make that $100 worth $1,000 in this bet that I made. And so that, in that way of creating like massive amounts of debt very quickly, is what allowed these very complex financial instruments to be built when we left the gold standard, which isn't necessarily, I want to point out, I know Larissa has this whole thing about our whole financial system being clownery. I don't necessarily think that's the worst thing, because what we got from that was like very complex financial instruments and like an extremely advanced financial tools and economy, which is pretty cool. However, unlimited money printing is a thing that eventually has consequences.
Yeah, you can't just fuck all day and not have consequences, aka print money.
Says whomst.
Inflation, apparently.
But yes, so in response to all of this, Bitcoin was created. Does anyone remember the 2008 recession? Because obviously it changed the way the economy worked in many, many ways. One of them being the creation of Bitcoin.
Yeah. So in a system where money supply expands 7% yearly, where asset prices inflate faster than wages, and where the game is rigged towards those with assets, you need an asset that outruns the printer now that the chastity belt has been unlocked. And that's where we get Bitcoin from. The point of Bitcoin is to have an asset that's scarce, it's divisible, it's digital, and it's transparent because it's on the blockchain.
Yes. So I want to bring that around to the initial point of this segment. The point is, the reason why I continue to buy Bitcoin, and the reason why I wanted to do this segment, is because I've been having this conversation with my friends and family lately of like, hey, like you should be buying Bitcoin. And they'll say, great, when will it 100x or whatever? And I'm like, I don't even look at price when I buy. And the reason why is because I look at Bitcoin as the new land. Remember when I said land is a scarce resource that you can build a whole bunch of tools around that is like the basis of the building of our modern economy? Bitcoin is also a scarce resource. There's only 21 million that are ever going to be in existence. So every little bit you buy is slowly increasing your little plot of land in that world. There will eventually be a whole bunch of tools and resources built on top of and around that land so that you can always borrow against the value of that land in the same way that previous generations did with the mortgages and the homes that they bought. And so I've been trying to teach my family this lesson, because when I buy Bitcoin, I genuinely don't really pay attention to price. I think about every little bit that I buy, first of all, is a bit that banks and institutions can't buy because they're buying it up like crazy, which also means that if there's enough trust and faith by banks and institutions to see this as an asset that's important to hold, then there's enough trust and faith that the individual should hold it as well. It's not going anywhere. And institutions will say it's a volatile asset or things like this. That's so that they can buy more. They want to be able to hold on to as much of this land as possible. So every little bit that you buy is a little bit that institutions can't buy. And every little bit that you accrue is a little bit that you'll be able to pass on to future generations or to yourself later on in life in order to be able to borrow and leverage against as well. And so I think it's really like, we joke a lot. We make a lot of jokes on this podcast. We talk about a lot of non-serious things. But one thing I'm actually really am genuinely passionate about is getting people more secure in their financial future. And I do think that Bitcoin is an incredibly important part of that portfolio because of the scarcity and the interest from institutions.
Yeah, in terms of safe assets, I hate when people call Bitcoin and group it with crypto and call it risky, because it's not. What's really risky is holding on to USD that's being inflated away mm-hmm. as the Fed keeps fucking. So that's the evolution of value.
Yes. So yes, if you walk away with one thing tonight, buy Bitcoin. And the coolest part about Bitcoin is that like a lot of investment products that are like only available with like 50K, 100K, even 10K buy-ins, you can buy $10 of Bitcoin right now. You can buy $1 of Bitcoin right now. Bitcoin actually as an asset class has some of the most holders ever because there is no minimum buy. So it's really cool that it's equitable in that way.
Okay, shall we talk about the evolution of risk?
Yeah. If you're already in crypto, like Bitcoin might not seem that risky, but if you are not in crypto, something like buying Bitcoin can feel like a pretty big leap to take. And I think one of the things that Larissa and I have realized is that in some ways, working in an industry that is as wild as crypto is, we're very used to high risk. And so we wanted to talk about that a little bit and how it's like changed our personal kind of perception of risk and what risk looks like.
Yeah, I mean, you can see what risk looks like because this is about to come off this tip from... And who knows what
I will say, the risk mitigation for Larissa was huge. She's covered in double-sided tape.
Sweating it all off, and that's what we call high risk tolerance.
Or low risk if you're that nervous. Jeez.
I'm a fucking walking paradox, Lindsay. What can I
also,
say?
I want to say, so Larissa and I just went to Thailand and we went to a ping pong show at her request, not mine, unsurprisingly. For the uninitiated, ping pong shows are like sex shows in Thailand. And Larissa was like so excited. She thought it was going to be this like fun, cute time. And like, she's not a wallflower, as you might have guessed. And the whole time she was sitting there like this.
Well, it was described to me as like, if you know The Box in New York, which is like this fun, erotic, sex-charged bar that has burlesque shows, it was described to me as that. And what we saw was, in Lindsay's words, haggard puss.
I forgot I said that.
Yeah. And that is simply the best way to describe it.
It definitely flirted more on the trafficking side of things in a way that I fully expected.
We were supporting the local economy.
Yeah, we were in Thailand. But Larissa did not. And I, for me, I'm enjoying seeing the same wide-eyed, bushy-tailed version of Larissa.
That's because they kept making us do all these interactive sports things, like hitting back ping pong balls that they shot out of their vaginas. Yeah. Lindsay's like hitting it back, like doing her thing, playing sports. And I'm like, and she's like, why are you so scared? And I'm like, why am I scared? Do you see where these are coming from? And then they gave her a cone to catch bananas, which came out of the same orifice.
Yeah.
And then the darts, thank God we weren't involved in, which they shot out and hit balloons with on the wall. So that's a ping pong show in Thailand. Definitely go. It was actually super fun and cultural.
Definitely take a person who's not ready for it, too. That was my best part. Okay, so risk. That was one that we took.
Definitely bring an athlete.
To bring
catch
athlete.
Those bananas.
Jesus. Okay, but anyways, working in this industry, we've learned a lot about risks and consequences. The consequences of going to a ping pong show were Larissa's discomfort. For me, it was all positive. Because seeing her be uncomfortable for once was perfect. But I will say, like, things, like, even in my personal relationships and stuff, like, things have changed so much for me because I am so used to this, like, fast-paced, high-risk, high-reward kind of lifestyle. And I was talking to a friend about this morning because one of the things, too, about working in crypto is you also get used to making decisions that may have small percentages of success outcomes. Like, we've all seen something that has, like, a 2% chance or an 8% chance or 10% chance of working in crypto. They work. Not all the time, but, like, there's such a high volume of those kinds of things that happen. Like, if anyone in the room knows Plasma, like, Plasma just 1,000x'd last week. So $10 was suddenly $10,000. That's insane. Like, that is a crazy, crazy place to work. And constantly being presented options where you can take those high-risk decisions and there's, like, a chance of them paying off is huge. Because even if you fail 90% of the time, 10% of those hit, you're good. And so it's changed a lot of how I view, like, my own decision-making, where I feel, like, very comfortable doing fast risk assessments and very confident in my ability to handle the consequences, good or bad. And so I feel like I've become more prone to accepting failure in a way that I definitely did not like 10 years ago. But I find it very difficult to like slow down. I'm like always ready to dive into the next thing.
Yeah, for me, I have never thought of working in crypto as risky. I've actually never thought of anything that by definition is risky as risky. It's like very intuitive for me. And so I'm like, I'm somebody with a high risk tolerance. And then the last 24, 48 hours have been like an ayahuasca trip for me in that I've been trying to decide what to say about these topics. And I've learned a lot about myself and put myself through every range of emotion on the human spectrum. And what I realized is that I am very quote unquote high risk in certain situations, but in others, I'm just a little baby bitch. Like vulnerability and romantic relationships, like things that are so intuitive to other people that they would not consider risky, like getting into a relationship or getting married. That is the most, to me, high risk. Insane, would never touch it with a 10-foot pole.
That reminds me, like, of an earlier episode of when you were like, would you marry someone after 2 weeks? And I was like, of course. And you were like, and this is the bitch I have to go to the clubs with.
Yeah, she's like falling in. I'm like trying to pick up a guy. She's falling in love with them. I'm like, not the point. But yeah, like going to bars and stuff, I would walk up to guys and say, you know, stuff that I'm not going to repeat on stage because this is going to be public eventually. But like, no problem, like not even think twice, like dime a dozen. But then go out with that guy and be interested in him and then text him back? Hell fucking no. Like, that's too risky. I'm not investing my time. And I'm like, damn, I'm maybe not so risk averse, or it's not as black and white as maybe it seems. Like, high risk investment, gambling, climbing the huge statue that says love in Philadelphia and getting stuck in the O. Sign me up. Getting into a car of a guy that catcalled me in North Philly. Sign me up. Mm-hmm. All things I did in college. Yeah, like insanity. My friends would consider me like the risk taker or like bolder one, but I see stability as risk. And I think there's two parts to that. Like, one of them is like, I'm maybe revealing stuff about my attachment style and blah, blah, blah. But then also the deeper thing for me is that like complacency and stagnancy. And I'm not associating marriage or relationships with that necessarily. But the point is, for me, is that like everything that is boring or could be boring is the real risk. And that's been like my life charge.
Well, we're aligned on that because we talk about all the time how being boring is the number one cardinal sin. Neither one of us could imagine that. I just think that we have sort of different appetites for what could be boring or what is scary, for sure.
I mean, this is scary.
Yeah. Kind of. I think what you're saying about like different risks for different people is like the thing that makes the most sense to me, because I don't feel like what I do is risky, but I also am aware that like I just checked off 19 countries in 1 year. And it's, yeah. And the year's not over yet. I got more coming up. Yeah. And so I think not necessarily that that's risky, but like, I think that I've gotten so many comments of like, I don't know how you do what you do. And I think that like what I'm realizing is just that my appetite for things looks so much different than other people. Like, if you wanted to go visit 20 countries in a year, you absolutely could. It's not impossible for a lot of people. Obviously, depending on like,
just get a job in crypto, they'll send you anywhere
for real. Obviously, depending on like socioeconomic constraints and all that stuff. But like, if you are of like a certain status, like all those things are super possible, right? And I remember talking to a friend because she did do the whole like get married, have a kid thing, and she was like, "Dang, I'm so jealous of where you're at." And I was like, "Why? Like, you're so happy where you're at. Why does it matter? Like, and that's awesome. Like, why would you want to be where I am? And why would I want to be where you are?" And she's like, "You just have such a good way of making me feel like I'm in the right place at the right time." And I'm like, "You are, though. Your series of life circumstances led you to crave this kind of lifestyle. And that's beautiful. My series of life circumstances led me to working in an industry that like barely has laws. So like, I'm going to take advantage of that while I can." So I think like being here, and I think like it's not just like working in crypto. I think it's also like a function of aging a little bit, because I do feel like I'm getting wiser. Maybe, probably not. But my dating history would say otherwise. I do feel like I'm getting at least more comfortable like where I'm at, and recognizing that like where I'm at is going to be really overwhelming to some people, but it's not to me. In the same way that where they're at like is going to be really overwhelming to me, but it's not to them.
Yeah. I mean, now I'm thinking, like, literally right now, I'm thinking, like, damn, maybe it's boring that I'm not taking risks relationship-wise. Like, maybe that, like, maybe
I really want Larissa
boring.
To enter her trad wife era. I think it'd be so funny. I want to note, too, that her fridge regularly has, like, one monster, an old bottle of, like, ketchup, and, like, some, like, haggard-looking jelly jar. So, like, just the thought of Larissa, like, in a kitchen with an apron on, like, cooking a beef Wellington.
To be clear, that will never happen. Does it matter if I'm married, if I have 50 kids? That will never happen. They'll all be eating takeout. And almond butter and jelly on a wrap.
I know. It's always on a wrap. It's sacrilegious.
It goes in the microwave first. It's like a crepe. It's so
That's
good.
That's disgusting.
Okay. Shall we move on to a topic that I don't have much to say on, which is the evolution of love.
Yes.
Beyond the fact that a prior me would never have been okay with the segment title being the evolution of love and would have insisted that it was the evolution of lust.
Yeah. Okay. I wrote a note on this. Oh, yeah. Larissa is becoming less of a horn dog and more of a trad wife. So
former, not true. And also latter, not, yeah, wholly not true.
Okay, but you are approaching the idea of thinking about maybe considering falling in love with someone.
I wouldn't put it that way. More like the dating pool has narrowed. My patience and tolerance has narrowed. I need somebody to cook for me.
God, no more microwaved almond and jelly.
It's good. That will never stop.
I don't believe you on that. No, I don't know. So
also sometimes on a spoon, a little scoop of almond butter and then a little scoop of jelly.
Oh my God.
On the same spoon.
So dating for me has been really weird because I was in a 10-year relationship where I was 5 years dating that person, 5 years married. So I went through a divorce last year. Very strange time. He's actually a lovely lad. But I am woefully underprepared for dating apps and just like in general. I've gone on like one date from a dating app and it was a really lovely Ivy League educated an anesthesiologist. He was like super smart and I was like, oh, this should be good. Showed up late, sweaty and in a Juicy Couture tracksuit and I was like, all right.
They make those for guys?
No, I showed up late, sweaty in a Juicy Couture tracksuit. No, if he did, we would have been getting married. Totally different. But yeah, so like I would say like pretty underprepared on that front. I also met him on a day that I was moving from New York, like Long Island, to West Virginia, which neither place makes sense. And he was like, why are you here, basically? And I was like, that's a great question. Because I was like, he's like, you know, when are you coming back to the city? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, where are you going next? And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, are you going to stay in this country? And I was like, probably not. And he's like, okay, cool. Like, why are you here? And I was like, I don't know, like, you seem really great. He ghosted me. unsurprisingly. But I did realize, like, with dating, I'm like, oh, maybe I'm the difficult one. Like, I'm the one who's, like, never in one place. I have, like, a million different projects and side projects that I do. I spend a lot of time investing in friends and family. And, like, I have a pretty demanding family life at the moment. And I'm like, I think I might be the problem.
Yeah. Well, am I? Does that mean I'm the problem too?
Probably. I mean, I think we should go through that though.
The guy with the scruffy, shaggy ass, crazy hair who comes up to me, like, I want him to fix it, but do I let him into my life and then fix his hair? Like, I don't want to change him. I mean, it's definitely too late now that I'm roasting him on a podcast and also walked away when he tried to talk to me twice. But if I wanted to go back, is that the right thing to do, is to try and change him? Like, what if he really loves looking like a fucking scraggy, scraggly, disgusting dog?
I don't know. Like, this is a thing that I kind of struggle with because it's like, oh my God, I've been off and on with someone for a really long time and we're back on again and I'm super happy. So, like, that's going well, which is good. But I've been, like, thinking about that a lot because, like, I heard someone say that they've been teaching their kids that they're allowed to make fun of a thing that the other person can change in 5 seconds or less. So it's like if someone's like wearing like ugly pants, you can be like, your pants are ugly.
Half asking you buzz a
buzz
a Labrador of a person.
That's what I'm saying. And that's like what I was trying to think of is like, okay, the things that could be changed in 5 seconds or less, like, you should probably work through, which is buzzing Labrador Retriever. Also, I want to note that Maisie kind of has a floppy hair haircut. So I feel like you should like
Maisie,
those.
Okay, well,
Maisie's her dog that she is, in fact, deeply in love with.
Totally different. She's allowed to look like a fluffy-ass dog, even though she's a human who's a dog.
Yeah.
He is a human who's a human.
She's not a
human.
Who's
a dog.
She's not a human. Larissa texts me, I think Maisie's a human. And I was like, she's not.
She has the mannerisms of a human. She acts like a human. She has the emotional intelligence of a human. And then she was leaning on me like a human. And I was like, are you a human? And she winked.
Yeah. She's a dog. Yeah. But
ask her, she'll tell you.
Anyways, but yeah, so I struggle with that though, because I'm like, do I have patience for stuff or do I just like give up early? But I lean way more on the patience side.
I lean way more on the give up early side, but now I'm like, am I giving up too early to the point where it's ruling out candidates that maybe I would have been interested in? Like, every time I've met a guy and been interested in him from meeting him in person, and then I've seen his dating app, I've been like, what the fuck is this? I would never swipe right on this. And like vice versa, whenever I find a guy on a dating app that I meet in person, I'm like, what the fuck is this? I can't believe I swiped right on this. And so I'm like, maybe should I be going out with the guys who I'm inclined to swipe left on? I don't think it's the right solution, but how do I start thinking about this differently? Any tips?
I don't know. Yeah. Any tips from the single?
Meet him in person. I mean, I'm not single, but my tip is,
even if he looks like a Labrador Retriever. In a not good way. I'm talking about, like, Cousin It. Oh, yeah, no, he worked in crypto, super rich, super hot otherwise.
Give him a shot, and then, like, slowly change him over time.
You would give somebody without eyes a shot. Cousin It walks up to you and wants to hook up. You're giving that guy a shot. Easy to say because you're in a relationship.
Yeah, yeah, she's engaged.
Bitcoin
yeah. Huh? Uh-huh. But
I like that. I like that. You build up a structure around the man.
Don't say for potential. Yeah, that's always been my perception and charges. Don't settle. Like, they should be where I want them to be when I meet them if I want to be with them.
You'll change. And that's okay.
I'll change.
But they won't?
No, but you'll change and what you won't be settling, but what you want will change.
I don't know if the man has a point. The man.
No, he has a point. He's married too, so.
Oh,
I get
okay.
It. Yeah.
All right. We have an expert on our hands.
Yeah.
A dating expert. Yeah.
We're like. You're a dating app for you?
Oh my God. Yes.
Sure.
We should have a. Yeah, we should for sure let other people swipe for Larissa. That feels like a really good solution, actually.
Yeah, maybe also it needs a zhuzhing, my dating app. Profile.
That should be a service. It has to be a service.
But then it's inauthentic. And like to me, authenticity is the most important thing. Like my
girl, you couldn't get over floppy hair. Get out of here.
I authentically rejected him.
Authenticity is so important to me, unless your hair is in your eyes.
His hair was authentically in his eyes, so I authentically rejected him.
Oh my God.
I don't see how that doesn't align.
No, I think like one of the recurring themes that like we've been talking about throughout the season is like balancing the sheer amount of opportunity with like being able to make a decision. And that's like, I feel the don't settle, and I also feel the like date someone that you feel like has potential to like be the person that you want them to be or whatever. There's a happy medium there somewhere where you're not necessarily settling, but you are growing with the person that you're with. And I don't know what that I don't know how to achieve it, which is why I got divorced. But yeah. But it's there somewhere.
Dating somebody with potential thing is an interesting concept to me that I haven't thought about before. And potentially has legs. I mean, like, I've never gone out with somebody and been like, he's not what I want, but he has potential to be.
Has anyone
like,
watched
if he's not
Indian
what I want,
matchmaking?
Then he's not what I want.
Has anyone watched a show on Netflix, Indian Matchmaking? Yeah. Okay, so Seema Aunty would say, if 70% of your requirements are met.
What if I've dismissed 100% of people on Earth who 70% of requirements?
She'll say 70 and then be like, here's someone who matches 20% of what you want. Figure it out.
But then what it, like, it's not my job to change him.
No, it's not.
But you change, right? That's what
we're right. You change. You've changed and evolved. So, like, do you think
the way that I wanted to, but what if he wants to change in a way that I don't want him to?
Yeah, but what if he's
what if he wants to grow his hair longer?
Yeah, have you thought about not getting 100% of what you want?
No.
Yeah, I think that's the problem.
I have never, literally, you are witnessing the dawn of...
I'm thinking about that.
Thinking about this.
That's so wild. I say that because, like, I've basically been a doormat my entire life, so I'm like, yeah, whatever you want.
Well, so I went to Augustine Burroughs, obsessed with him, the author. I went to a reading that he did in San Francisco, and people were asking him questions, and one was like, I'm engaged, blah, blah, blah. So, like, how do you, and, like, we bicker, blah, blah, blah. Like, how do you know? And he cut them off, and he was like, it's wrong. It's wrong. He was like, if you meet the right person, you know. You don't have to question it. You don't have to think about what could change. Like, you just know. And I think that ruined me because that's what I'm waiting for, is to know. Not to meet somebody and be like, well, if he tied his hair back or...
Was that the book?
Running with Scissors.
Yeah. How old is this author?
60s.
Yeah. What does he know about dating apps? What does he know about the wealth of opportunity we're
currently faced with?
His
writing encouraged me to get on the apps because he was like, it was online dating at the time, but he was like, what could be better than sorting through an endless mass of people in your underwear?
That sounds horrible. Then you can always be like, oh, well, this, like, what if I feel more strongly about this other person?
That's what dating apps are, and that's why we're fucked.
I'm just reading this book. Uh-huh. About apps. So I said you didn't have so much opportunity. You'll never find perfect.
Thank you.
Settle for good enough.
Yes. It's
will
commitment.
You pay for my divorce when good enough is bad?
Yeah, I agree, because it's the commitment part. My father-in-law who said this, he didn't have the opportunities you all had. He's like, I grew up in Pittsburgh. I wanted to be in Pittsburgh. I married a woman from Pittsburgh, and I lived in Pittsburgh, and I had a family, and he loves his life, which I love for him. He's like, look at all the like travel you do. Look at the money that you could make. Look at all the people you could meet, the things you could see. He's like, I didn't have that available. Like, that wasn't in my path. And so he was the first person to ever say that. And I thought, like, holy shit. Like, the sheer amount of options that are out there for us right now is so hard to parse through. But my point is, like, people in their 60s, like our parents and stuff, like, they haven't had to deal with this. Like, we literally can't even, like, pick a restaurant without, like, looking at, like, Google Maps reviews. Like, you don't just, like, go down the street and pick a restaurant anymore, which is the thing I've actually tried to do consciously. Because I'm like, if it's bad, whatever, I'll live.
But I feel like the majority of couples that I know that are in their 60s or older, like, had very compromising marriages. Like, if they made it this long, haven't been necessarily super happy because they settled for good enough.
I don't think that that's, like... I don't know. I don't think that's a problem. I don't think that's problematic, though, in certain ways, though. Because, like, for those of you who don't know, my mom died 10 years ago when I was young. Lars has also lost a parent. We're in that club. But, like, I always told my mom and dad, I want to love like yours in a marriage nothing like it. Because they had, like, all these problems, right? But at the end of the day, they were there for each other. Like, yeah, there was, like, bad stuff. There's a lot of bad stuff. But they never wavered on that commitment. It was never like, oh, like, actually, I'm unhappy now and I'm going to dip. Like... that just, like, wasn't a frame of reference. And so, like, they had a 30-plus year marriage, and there were a lot of lows. But there was also that unwavering, strong, stable commitment that was there through it. And I feel like now, because there is so many options and it is so easy to just leave, I feel like, we just, like, don't take that risk. And I hate that.
Damn, bringing it back to risk. Now I gotta take that risk. All right, yeah. I'm gonna marry the next single guy who hits on me.
Oh, my God.
Talk about risk.
Yeah, that would be a move.
Emphasis on single.
Yeah. Oh my God, I know.
Like 100x leverage.
Yeah. Oh, I love that! The evolution of value. Yes. Yes. Marriage is 100x leverage. I love that. I'm gonna tweet that later. Thank you.
Okay, damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Appreciate you.
So do you guys have questions? Anybody?
Oh my God.
I have a question. What's your 100% standard? What are the things that you are?
Okay, he's got to have... Are you trying to check them off? He's got to have dark hair, so you got one of them. I'm not hitting a married man during our live show. Actually, that's evolved. He doesn't have to have dark hair. Gray is okay, too. Maybe even blonde. Smart, successful, ambitious. Also doesn't want to settle for less than 100%. And is somebody who's a go-getter, who's authentic. I feel like I'm describing things that aren't that hard... to have.
You're describing yourself, which is funny, because I too would date myself.
AI will get us there. Yeah. Just really smart and curious about the world, and somebody who's interested in building, whether it's a cult, an army, a company, a family could be on the list, but like somebody who's interested in moving forward in life together.
Not being boring. Yeah.
Not just coming home every night and looking at each other and how was your day? Oh, how was your day? Good. Okay. And that's the rest of our lives. Like, never. I would way rather be by myself forever.
Yeah.
With Maisie.
With Maisie. It was.
What does 100% look like? Yeah, me. Yeah. In male form.
Where's the question? Yeah.
What are your super specific icks? Life, people, all the things. What are your super specific icks in the world?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. Like a conspiracy theorist? I can't.
I thought that was something that you're attracted to.
Yeah, rumor has it.
When did your green flag change to red?
Yeah, true. Yeah, mostly the QAnon variety. I accidentally went at a Bitcoin conference, sat at a table with Martin Shkreli, and I was like, I have got to stop being around who I'm around for like 3 minutes. We gotta pull me out. So yeah, I'm looking to move away from that kind of person.
Somebody who thinks one dimensionally, unconditionally, always. And so that's
so much more insightful.
Somebody who thinks they're 1,000% right on something and doesn't recognize that there's always stuff that they don't know.
Yeah. A serious ick for me is actually lack of being challenged. I have a tendency to dominate. Not even on purpose. I just, like, I'm very convincing in what I'm saying, but I know that I'm not always right. And so I need someone who is strong enough to push back on me and not be afraid to. That's actually the name of this podcast, was because I joked that I was an alpha seeking an alpha. Like, I needed someone to out-alpha me. And so, like, I need someone who's, like, gonna call me on my bullshit if I'm, like, trying to, like, get around something or take the easy way out. And I need someone who's gonna, like, tell me when I'm going down a path that's wrong. And, like, not having that challenge is, like, I gotta go.
Also, guys who wear sweatpants with flip-flops.
No, flip-flops in general. We've talked about this. Men's feet should never be exposed. Wrong reason for clapping. Thank you. What other questions can we answer for you all? I would buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would put it into Ethereum and Bitcoin.
Ooh, you would pick each.
Hashtag diversify.
Yeah, no. I'd go for like a DeFi yield protocol before I went for Ethereum.
I mean, ETH is another that's never going away. It's too big to fail at this point.
I love getting my 18%, okay?
DApps will continue to be built on it forever.
Yeah, for sure.
It's never going away.
And yeah, I just like don't believe in it as a. I hold Solana too. I'd buy Solana first. I think Solana has like a. I mean, they are responsible. Them and Hyperledger are responsible for like 53% of all crypto revenues. So, feel pretty good about that one. Bitcoin is my serious investment that I'll never sell. And then if I'm going to speculate on something, I'm going to speculate on the one that's making the money. I'm not going to speculate on the one that's never going to die. I'm going to try to make that.
But
shit
I think
go
ETH
up.
Will always outpace. Yeah. I mean, not outpace, but. ETH will always be higher than Solana.
We'll see. Market.
By the way, one of the things I told myself to combat anxiety about this was if worse comes to worse, we can always engage in Mortal Kombat.
Oh my God!
And that handshake just reminded me of this.
Okay, yeah. I would like that because I would win.
See, that's what you think, but what you don't know is I got that rage. You got the...
Girl, what you don't know.
The height, the strength... The agility, the coordination.
I would like to call on a friend here. My former basketball teammate is in the room. I also have that rage. Other questions?
If you're dating a guy and you were like, I don't know, I want you to go explore, would you create a hinge for him to make it better?
I want him to go explore other women.
would you help him make his hinge better?
If I was dating him? No, I would make it worse.
I have tried this mode of relationship and it does not work for me. Props to the people that can do it. I just I can't, it's the drama. There was never jealousy, but I was like, I don't want to deal with your dating life. I tried non-monogamy, which is for my partner's benefit at the time. It was not for me. I did not really use it. And my partner did, he did. And he just was had so many feelings about getting hit on or not getting hit on, all that stuff. And I get hit on all the time because, I'm a woman. Barely have time for one man's drama. I'm not going to add to the pile.
So, you guys talk about diversification. Do you guys also invest in other investment vehicles that, are outside of crypto?
No.
That's so funny because, I actually just pulled all my money from a mutual fund because it had made, 3% in a year, and I was like, fuck this. I'm gonna put it in DeFi protocol. I'm done.
Yeah. 100% of my savings are in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And then I fuck around with the other assets.
I do have a high yield savings because I like having something that's pretty liquid. So my mom had a 10-year medical disease, so I have a deep fear of I'm going to need $15,000 to fix a medical problem tomorrow. So I keep a high liquid savings. That's a high yield account. But then my serious savings is all in either Bitcoin or DeFi protocols. Working in crypto is so funny because you learn what money is doing for institutions and banks. And money that sits there consistently, no matter what, makes 10 to 15%. And so for me, I'm not a trader. I'm pretty risk averse. I'm not super interested in making super risky bets, but I am very interested in having the same opportunity that banks do to make 10, 15, 20% on whatever I have that's just sitting around. So I have this joke that I'm born to yield, not to trade. Yield princesses. That's me. So basically I want to put my money in protocols where it gets automatically lended out to things that earn interest. And I'm not really the one that's messing with it. My famous kind of investment story is back in 2020, my ex-husband and I had $25,000 to invest. And I was okay, we should split it between three things, NVIDIA, Roblox, and Bitcoin. And he put it in none of those things.
Yeah. And that's why they got divorced.
Whatever. It wasn't... the one thing about working in Bitcoin is, like I said, something 1,000x last week. There's always money out there that you could make. But after that, I was okay, I hate this. It's just, not for me. So I tried a mutual fund, which, typically they have pretty decent returns, somewhere between, 5 and 12%. But even that, I was like, it's too low. Rather just park it in a DeFi yield protocol or buy Bitcoin. So I have used traditional investment vehicles, but I'm like just not impressed by them.
What are your favorite top 2 or 3 DeFi protocols?
I mostly use Blend at the moment. DeFi protocol on Stellar. Yeah, it earns somewhere between 9% and 25%. Sits pretty solid around 15 to 18, and it's like really, really easy to access. I do also like Curve, and the Curve is like one of the biggest and most popular and stuff. But like, I'm like not someone who's like looking for that like secret niche opportunity, to be honest. Like, I just want to know that it's self-custody and it's earning a decent percentage, and like that's it. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to trade on it. I don't want to do anything else. So yeah, super, super low maintenance is like what I look for. The one thing that I would love to tell you guys that's like a little bit behind the scenes, and I've like, I mean, if you've heard me talking, you've heard this, but like Larissa and I have like such different thought patterns, ways of thinking, like all of this stuff. We have a lot of alignment in who we are, but we also have like a lot of places where we just aren't the same. And like our conversations, I've texted her so many times and been like, this is like one of the best conversations I've ever had, because we disagree in a way that's like so actually genuinely wonderful, where I'm like, I can actually say what I'm thinking and she respects it and says back why I'm wrong, why I'm right, why she's thinking the way she's thinking. And like, I think if anyone were to sit in, like, you, I think, like, it would be easy to be like, oh, this could turn in an instant. But the thing is, like, I trust her to know that our conversations will never turn. So I know that, like, I can be, like, super real and we can go back and forth with this. And she's actually the one who gave me the gift of starting the podcast. It was her idea. She wrote the plan. She approached me and she did it. And it's, like, we just hit a year. It's been one of the most fun things I've ever done.
One day the conversation will turn when you least expect it, and I'll kick you in the throat instead of respectfully responding.
No, it's fun because I'm like such a lover girl, and I know she's sitting over there freaking out that I just gave her a love speech on stage.
I don't have one prepared.
Exactly. I did that on purpose.
I like your hair.
But no, it's been like so real. So thank you for a great year.
Producer Matt's going to cry again.
But yeah. All right. Well, if there's no other questions,
take shots.
Yeah, time for shots. Thank you all
so much.
First live show, woo! We did it. Yeah.